Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, happy Monday to all of you, wherever you might be. Here we are already into September. Amazing. My guest today is Cindy Carrillo. She is a business and life coach. She's an author, she's an advisor, and she's a ranch girl. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thank you, Marcia. It is great to be here.
Oh, I'm loving this. And for all of you, you are going to be in for a treat today because Cindy is really, really interesting, and you're going to find out more about her. So why don't you just tell our audience just a little bit about yourself?
Well, you know, I think the way that I would describe myself is I'm a little restless, which makes me a little bit of an entrepreneur. I kind of embrace change. And for a long time, I think I really struggled with whether or not change was a good thing for me. Was being a change agent a good thing? I ended up starting my own company about, 30-some-odd years ago, and took my company through several iterations. I like to call them pivots, where depending on the time, depending on my interest level, depending on what the business needed and what my life needed, I would change the business around. And I ran that business for about 20-some-odd years. And then in the spirit of change yet again, I realized, you know, I think I've done enough with this business. I grew it into a national company. I was working with Fortune 100 companies. It was a service-driven company that was primarily run its entire life by me, a woman. And I was starting to yearn for something new, for something different. And I realized I really probably wasn't the person to keep it moving forward. So I decided to sell it. So
How did you come to that decision? That couldn't have been easy.
You know, it wasn't, I don't think it was easy or difficult. I think it was a process, and I think that's what I've started to understand about change, is that change is a process where we have a feeling. We begin to think, maybe I don't want to do this anymore. Maybe I'm bored. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe I'm uninterested. Maybe I want more. Whatever it is, it begins with a feeling that something needs to change. And I started to experience that feeling. It wasn't that I wasn't happy or I wasn't satisfied. I just wanted a little bit more and something different. So over a period of time, I became more and more aware that I didn't want to be stuck. And I didn't want to lose my interest and my energy and my excitement for the business, which wouldn't have been fair to my employees. It wouldn't have been fair to my clients. It wouldn't have been fair to myself, my family. And that's when it started to crystallize that I could move on. And I could move on in a way that would benefit me, benefit the business, benefit my employees. And then once the decision was made, once I sort of became comfortable with the fact that was going to be okay, then the rest almost was easy because then it was like, okay, now the rest is details. How do I do it? And that I got help with.
That's, and how you're that person, that's kind of interesting. And I want to let our listeners know, because I think that your website is fabulous, and we're going to be talking a lot about finding your next. And so for those of you that are listening, and I'll make sure that this is posted in my blog, Cindy's website is finding, just the way you would spell it, your, just the way you would spell it, next, not the way you think you would spell it. It is spelled NXT, findingyournxt.com. And once you log into that, you will see just a tremendous, tremendous website. I love it. It's terrific. It's beautiful. It's well put together. And it has so much information about everything that you do. And the pictures are beautiful. And because we're going to be talking about a few things today, I'd like to start off by talking about your book. I have your book in front of me. And I love the title. It's called Finding Your Next. This, as I said, NXT. And it doesn't just say finding your next. Let me say what it says afterwards. When you're ready for the life you really want, which I think is a clarifier there as well. But if I'm curious, others are probably curious as well. And I would like to know, why did you drop the E in next?
You know, it was a couple of reasons. One was that I think when people are looking at change, I know I did, after I sold the company, I was being asked, and I was asking myself, you know, what's next? What's next? And I felt a certain sense of urgency, you know, to how to answer that question, and a sense of importance that there are small changes and small steps and small stages we might go through in our lives. And then there are some times where, man, it's a big next, right? And when you're asking yourself, what's next, there's an emphasis on that. And with that sense of urgency, I just thought, we're just going to gloss over the E. And because it's kind of like, oh, what's next? And I wanted to distinguish it from the little emphasis sometimes that we put on, hey, I'm going to do this next, or I'm going to go here next. It's sort of the day-to-day next are encompassed in that N-E-X-T with a small case N. I'm talking about and wrote the book about the times in our lives, and again, that process around change that I think warrants the capital N and the XT of what are you going to do and how do you find your next. That's
that. You know, I could see that this crosses generations.
Yes.
Depending upon what's happened in your lifestyle, I can relate to that. I was married. Life was great. Going along with my life as it was. And suddenly that changed in a heartbeat, no pun intended.
Yes.
And when my husband died so unexpectedly, it's like, well, geez, now what am I going to do? What's next? And
really?
I can sort of, you know, or maybe you're in a position in your life where you've got children and now they've graduated from high school and now they're going on to college. It's like, well, what's next for us? Now the kids are in college. Now what are we going to do? I mean, I can see where people use that, whether it's an urgency, as you mentioned, or it's a curiosity. I can see where people ask that question of themselves if they're looking forward, you know?
Yes.
And so, and I think that I just think your book is fabulous, but I do think that with your background, this has been a really great way of you giving really important information. So what I'm curious to know about, well, I'm curious about a lot of things, and that is, well, I ask a lot of questions, right? Why did you decide to actually write a book about this?
Thank you for asking that, because that was a next for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think I always wanted to write a book, but I never really had a topic that I thought that I could explore fully. And mm-hmm. I think the fact that I had experienced the process of a pretty major life transformation from being the founder and CEO of a company that I grew over 20 some odd years and then changed my life completely, moved, found a piece of property, ended up really redefining how I wanted to live my life, that there was a story there and that I had learned so many lessons along the way that I realized I had experienced over and over in my life, but over time, at different times, like so many of us do, as we move through our lives, we change all the time, but we don't think about it as a pretty consistent process. And because I made such a conscious and intentional lifestyle change after selling the company, it was very poignant to me, and it was mm-hmm. very obvious to me that there was a process that I could define, I could articulate, and I had lived through. And I think it was that personal experience mm-hmm. that gave me a certain amount of confidence, a certain amount of excitement to share the stories and the lessons. And I think it gave me a framework that I was able to really put down on paper for the first time. And it's funny because, you know, nothing's on paper anymore, although the book is. Mm-hmm. But it comes, mm-hmm. you know, now we do so much digitally and audio and everything. But I think the important thing for me was that I could see the framework of the story and weave in all of those lessons learned that I really do think apply to anyone who's asking themselves what's next, and they mm-hmm. need some guidance and some a framework for themselves maybe to help them find what's next in their life.
Right. Makes sense. And so when you talk about designing the life you want in your book and finding your next, did you want to add more to how did you actually approach that for yourself?
Yeah, it was, I wish I could say, boy, this was something I had planned for years and years and years, but I had inklings of it. And I talk about in the book that one of the things that I think as we age, as we grow up and become adults, we sometimes stop dreaming, you know, and hoping and sort of thinking about what could be in our lives. And I found myself in this fabulous situation where I could go back to some of those early dreams. And I remembered when I first moved to Colorado, I was raised in Michigan, and I ended up moving to Colorado for a number of reasons, but I ended up going to college in Colorado. And when I first got here, I took a little bit of a road trip with my best friend who came out with me. And we drove through the state, which if you've never been to Colorado or any of your listeners,
mm-hmm.
oh, my goodness, this is one of our national treasures. This is a gorgeous state. And so I drove from Denver and drove to the southwestern part of the state. We had no idea where we were going. We were 19 years old, and we got in the car. And as we drove down here, we ended up in a part of the Rocky Mountains called the San Juan Mountains. And I got to tell you, there's this little town down here called Ouray, Colorado, which dubbed itself the Little Switzerland of America.
Ooh.
And it is stunning. The mountains just rise up, and I was somewhat overwhelmed with the beauty and the majesty and the magnificence of these mountains. And one day, I remember saying to my friend Nancy in the car, I said, I don't know when. I don't know how, but one day I will be back here and I will make my life down here. And, you know, we drove back to Denver And, you know, life happened. And mm-hmm. I had a great life. And I raised two kids. I got married. I started my business. I went to grad school. I had a great early part of my life. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of forgot the dream. And when I sold the company, somehow it kept coming up. But I didn't remember the dream. I was just responding to the question of, what are you going to do next, that people would ask me. And at this time in my life, aging, you know, having sold a company, having been there, done that, the two choices I think I thought I had was you either start another company or you retire. And I was like 55, and I felt like, geez, I don't want to retire. I've got so much more I want to do. I don't know what that is yet, but I'm not done. So every time I said, I think maybe I'll just retire, I put air quotes around it. You know, because I think I knew that I was on to something. And then I remembered, geez, I think I want to live in the mountains with a magnificent view. And I said it over and over. I think maybe what I'll do is I'll buy some land in the mountains. Maybe I'll have a house with a porch, and I'll get a rocking chair, and I'll sit in the rocking chair with a really big hat, and I'll sit there all day looking at the view. I don't know why I needed a hat to do that, but I thought maybe that's what I'll do.
That's how you saw yourself. Yeah.
That's funny. And that sort of took on a life until I started to remember, wait a second, there's a place that I kind of early on was dreaming maybe I could do that. So that's where I started to look, and I started to think, maybe I'll get some property. And it kind of took on a life of its own.
Wow. Isn't that, and you know, it's not, I mean, you mentioned you're from Michigan. My husband was from Detroit. So, I mean, that's city. It's industrial. I mean, there's obviously beautiful places in every state we all live in, and there's some beautiful spots in Michigan as well. But what you're describing sounds like a piece of paradise. And if you, when people go to your website and just sort of look at your home page, and, I mean, it's just, it's so beautiful. And, you know, you can just sort of imagine it. You can almost smell it. I wanted to talk with you about your book because it's so well constructed. And one of the things that you focus on your book are called blockers that can get in the way of making a change in your life. And I was wondering if you could share something about, you know, what blockers are and how that can get in the way of making changes.
Absolutely. You know, I went through them, and I started to become very aware of them, but I realized that even as I was going through them, how universal these blockers really are. When we're looking to make a change, I think our protective nature as humans is that we kind of want to stay comfortable, right? We want to stay with what we know. So the first GERD that typically raises up for us and sort of raises its evilness, if you will, is really the fear of the unknown. Man, just that idea of stepping into some kind of a void of, we're so comfortable knowing what we know and who we know and where we are and what we do. There's something that just holds us. And when change is in front of us, it often requires that we trust and we're willing to begin to do things that maybe we've never done before, that maybe make us a little uncomfortable, that or maybe are great for us, but we've still never done them before. So that makes us feel uncomfortable in advance of even doing them. And sometimes when we allow the fear of the unknown to really get in our way or block us, it can be very, very paralyzing. So what I've come to understand, is that the fear of the unknown that rises up in front of us is really our protective self telling us that we don't have enough information to make the decision to take a step forward. We have some more work to do. We have some more answers that we need to find. So when the fear of the unknown starts to well up in us and it feels like, man, we're standing on the edge of this precipice and all we see is darkness below us, well, geez, nobody wants to jump off into that.
Right.
Of course we're going to hold back. That's what the blocker does, is it holds us where we are so we're nice and safe. But really what that says is we need to shed some light in front of us. We need to create a path in front of us. So we have to gather more information before we can move through the fear of unknown and become unblocked so that we can move forward. We're not going to have all the answers, but we tend to be able to move forward when we have enough information. So that's the first
sense.
The fear of the unknown. The second one that stops us is the fear of failure, because nobody likes to fail. And nobody likes to make mistakes. And nobody likes, with the unknown, to like have the question of, oh, my goodness, can I do it? Would I do it? What if I can't do it? Oh, if I can't do it, that would be horrible. So we block ourselves because we're just afraid of making mistakes, not getting it right. We're afraid of disappointing others. We're afraid of disappointing ourselves. And my understanding now, having gone through the changes that I've gone through in my life and being able to document the process, is change creates mistakes. We're all going to make them. It's called trial and error. And it's okay because there's no such thing in my book as failure. It doesn't exist if we learn. If you learn from your mistakes, where's the failure? So if we go into finding our next with the assumption that we're not going to get everything perfectly right, that we're going to have to learn from our experiences along the way, then there can't be any failure because we're always growing. We're always learning. We're always expanding and getting more information, more knowledge. So we just bust that blocker right out of the way when we don't even accept the premise that there will be failure. The third is our willingness to settle. Man, that one's insidious because we get so comfortable and we let the fear of failure and the fear of the unknown stop us in our tracks. So we just stay where we are and we settle because we think it's easier. We think it takes less energy. We think it takes less time. When the reality is, it just sucks our soul to settle. We're not happy. We're not thriving. And I believe we all deserve to thrive. So the willingness to settle sometimes just needs to be pushed and shoved and moved out of the way because we deserve more.
Yeah. Those are such important life lessons. It feels like this is a book children should be reading. I think you have to kind of go through some of these experiences probably to understand that, oh, gosh, you know what? I was afraid of that. Or, geez, I didn't want to do that because I thought I'd fail. Or I'll just go ahead and do it that way because that's how I've always done it. I mean,
yeah.
I can hear what you've said. What would you say to someone who has a great idea about what they'd like to do next, but they don't know if they should do it or not?
Yeah, I get that one a lot. So
I bet.
After selling the company and redesigning my life, one of the things I decided to do was to go into coaching because I've always been a mentor. I have a master's in social work, and I've always been a coach to my employees, my friends. So that is probably the number one issue that I deal with my coaching clients is I think I want to do something. I can kind of picture it. I've got an idea. I don't know how to begin. I don't know how to even address it. And, you know, the human part of us, the other thing that happens when we have an idea, along with the blockers, is that we tend to dive straight into the details. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got an idea of a widget I want to make. How do I do that? What would it look like? What are the dimensions? What are the, how do you manufacture it? Or, gosh, I've had a problem. I think I can solve this. I think other people have a problem. I could develop a service that would do X, Y, or Z. Why? Would I need a website? How much would I charge for it? Who would do it? How do I hire people? We go smack dab into the details.
Mm-hmm.
My recommendation in the way I coach is I ask people to back it up, and I ask questions. The first question is, why? Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you want to do this? What's it going to do for you? Why is it important? And I think we forget to ask why. Why we're going to spend our time. And what is important about the things that we do and how we spend our time and how we are living our lives. If we can determine for ourselves what's important first, then we can use that as a filter for every idea and decision that we need to make moving forward. Because it should pass through that filter as to this meets my criteria for what's most important in my life. Once we do that, the idea is easy.
You know, it sounds so obvious, and yet it is a mindset. And if your mind isn't set in that direction, you might not even ask yourself those questions.
Most people don't.
So why do you think, I should say this, what do you think is one thing that people tend to miss when they're going through the process of trying to figure out what is next for them? What do you think that they're skipping?
This is going to sound really strange.
No, it's not.
I think the place that people get hung up is on the decision. You got to make a decision. You got to put a stake in the ground at some point that you're going to now take action and do. I think we get into our heads a lot, and we go through answering the questions, and do we have enough information, which is all important, by the way, as I said earlier. We need information. But at some point, you have to stop, and you have to say, okay, I am going to decide to do this or not do this.
Mm-hmm.
When I was looking to sell the company, man, the process of making the decision, the hard part. Once I made the decision, the rest actually fell into place. Because now I knew that I had to break it down. I had to figure out the how. I had to figure out the who. And there were things that I now knew and had the confidence to move forward and do. Because it wasn't, are you? Are you not? Will you? Will you not? Can I? Will I? Now it was, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I will. I'm now doing. And that's the point that a lot of people get to the cusp of and just don't know how to do that.
Right. I would imagine a lot of people, I'm using air quotes as you mentioned before, are just sort of stuck in what it is they do because it's what they're familiar with. And maybe the fear of change is greater than staying where they are. Maybe they're satisfied with where they are. Maybe they're not even questioning, gosh, you know, I've been doing this all this time. Do I really still like it? Well, I think I do. Well, what would you do if you weren't doing that? Oh, my God, I never asked myself that question before. You know, I can, and, you know, and I don't know if that is that gender related or no?
I found that that is not necessarily gender related, but I'll tell you something
okay.
that goes with that. And that is that we think that the only time we should make a change oftentimes is when
mm-hmm.
things are bad. So mm-hmm. until they go bad or until we make them bad, we feel like we can only justify moving on in our lives if something's bad. And when you think about it, think about how our society sets things up. If you're going to leave one job for another, then oftentimes what we do is we make the job we have really bad. Oh, I hate
mm-hmm.
my boss. I hate the people I work with. I'm not satisfied. We look for all the negative reasons in order to make ourselves feel better about,
mm-hmm.
like, leaving. And we do it in relationships, too. Look how we do divorce. Look how we break up with people. We do that by making it horrible, like all bad, good or bad. It has to be all bad in order for us to move on. Well, we don't have to do that. Change can be something that we move forward into. So one job could set you up and give you everything that you need in order to move to the next job. And I think sometimes we just need to appreciate it for what it's given us so that we can take the next opportunity and step into that. And we don't have to make the job that we're leaving horrible and bad and, ugh, I need to get out of this, so therefore
mm-hmm.
I feel better about moving to another position. Same thing in a relationship. If it's not working, it's not serving you both, then redefine it. You fell in love. You like the person. Figure out what that was and figure out how to redefine the relationship so that you can move forward and both get what you're looking for
mm-hmm.
in the future. So I think we've been set up that change comes from bad, things that aren't working. And when I sold the company, I got to tell you, I loved the company. I loved
mm-hmm.
what I was doing. I loved it. I realized that I was on the cusp of getting into being unsatisfied, being into, you know, finding myself being uninterested or bored. That would have become negative.
Mm-hmm.
So change, if it's done, if you look at the timing of it, can be very opportunistic and really save you from going down that negative hole.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I like the word because I think that's a great word. I want to pivot over to your ranch because I think it's pretty remarkable that you live on this ranch. I think it has a name, doesn't it? Did you name your ranch?
I did, because ranches get named. The unlike
okay,
living
I didn't know that.
In a neighborhood, you name your property. I didn't know that
until I
found a piece of property. But people
wow.
name their ranches. So we
mm-hmm.
named our ranch CC Blue, and it's a sweet story. Can I tell you the story?
Oh, I'd love to hear it. Story love.
So I have a man in my life, Matthew, and we were embarking on this change together where we had found this piece of property. It's about 35 acres, and there was
mm-hmm.
nothing on the property. And we were sitting on the property one day and had started to sort of imagine what it would look like. And we realized we should name the property. Everybody names their property. And we were coming up with horrible names, like just really silly, just, you know,
uh-huh.
oh, gosh, I can't even remember off the top of my names. But, like, you know, just think of the worst, like, Heavenly Acres, you know, just so cheesy. And
uh-huh.
his phone went off, and up on the screen came CC Blue. And my initials are CC, and this is silly, but my eyes are blue. And he had me
oh my
in
gosh.
His phone as CC Blue. And I didn't
oh my
know.
Gosh.
And I saw it in his phone, and I'm like, wait a second, who's that? you know, uh-huh. had a little uppity about the whole thing. Who's Stacy Blue? And he laughed and he goes, it's you, silly. And I was like, what? And he goes, you, that's your initials. And you know I always call you Blue because of your eyes. And I'm actually blushing right now telling you this story. And
that's a great story.
We were talking about naming the ranch, right? And he looks at me and he goes, that's it. That's the name of the ranch. And it stuck.
I love that. So that's a great story. So you decided to live there. It looked very appealing to you. And 35 acres. I mean, I'm a city girl. I live less than 10 minutes from a major airport in this country. I grew up in the city. So, I mean, I don't know what it's – I have visited places that are, you know, especially on the East Coast. But as far as actually being on a ranch and spending time on a ranch, I have never done that. So on your CC Blue, which I just love, did you start getting farm animals?
We did. It was kind of an evolution. You know, it was first we built a house, and then we realized we're about a six-hour drive from where we were living at the time in Boulder, outside of Denver. And so, you know, I recognized that our friends and family were not going to be dropping by for dinner. Right? Six hours you're staying for a couple of days at least.
Right.
So we also built a separate little guest house. And once we had been there a little bit and we were starting to think about what to do with the land, and we've got pasture and we've got a little creek that runs through the property, and we kind of carved out an area that has since been called kind of the compound. And the rest was nature and pasture land and these other little areas. And I started to think about gardening, and I started to think about, well, this is kind of a farm. 35 acres is not big enough to, like, earn a living. It's a hobby ranch. You know, it's not like looking at TV shows where they're on horseback for a half a day. No,
I see.
It's much smaller. But it's big enough that you can raise animals, you can have chickens, you can have some cows, you can have horses. And I tell you, for me, being a suburban girl, you're a city girl, I'm a suburban girl, having never lived on a farm or a ranch, I needed things to be small and manageable. So I got this idea, and I thought, you know, I'd love to raise animals. I would. But I don't know how. So I started looking into it, and there are smaller breeds of goats. There are smaller breeds of horses. There are smaller breeds of pigs. So we ended up building a barn with the intention of bringing small breed miniature horses, miniature donkeys, small breed goats and pigs. We have some chickens. We have regular-sized cows, but I tell you, I think I want to get some miniature cows. Anyway, I love the idea of having more of a petting farm, but also being able to raise animals as part of one of our values living on the ranch is sustainability and being sort of self-sufficient. I guess it would be self-sufficient-ish. I don't know, country-ish, because I still go to Target, and I'm never going to make my own potato chips. I'm just not going to make it. You know, I can now. I grow our own food. We raise some animals for food. But by and large, we run a farm with animals that I can interact with and take care of, along with Matthew, that are manageable for us and honestly just give us joy. Just make me smile every single day.
That's so you had never built a barn before, I assume, right?
Oh, God, no.
I wouldn't think so.
In fact, when I went to figure out how to build a barn, I went back to the architect that had helped us build the house, and he had never built a barn. And he said, what do you have in mind? I said, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go start looking. And my go-to for designs of barns was Pinterest.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I got all kinds of ideas from Pinterest, and then we started to customize it to make it our own. I asked a lot of ranchers down here, too, had barns, mm-hmm. you know, if you could do it again and build your perfect, like, you know, place for animals, what are some of the practice wisdom ideas that you would pass along to us? And those were fun conversations, too. So we ended up building a barn that serves us, and it's great. It's just great.
So for those of us that don't live in barns, or not that you live in a barn, but that don't have a barn, so do you have cows that you milk, that you get your milk from?
No, we decided, you know, I almost did it with goats, but it's a lot of work. We have meat cows. We actually got a cow that I just thought was beautiful that was on an adjoining property. So they're black cows with, like, white furry stripe around them. I just thought they were so stunning and beautiful to look at on these gorgeous pastures that so I make my decisions based on what things are going to look like, how they're going to fit in, and I have a high value for cuteness. So if something's cute, it's probably going to make it into our lives. So, you know, baby goats were a thing for us for a while because there's probably nothing cuter than a baby goat, and other than maybe a piglet. I got to say, they are awfully cute. So we go for cute. My horses, totally cute, because they're like big dogs. So the cuteness factor is very important to me.
And do you ride these horses? Are they just like in pastures?
No, they're small. They're miniature horses.
Oh,
so
they're
like
miniature.
My granddaughters could potentially ride the horse, but they walk them. So we brush the horses together, and they come into the barn every night because all of our animals are on the smaller side. So they're prey. So we built the barn in a way where all of our animals could be safe at night from the predators that we have living in this valley.
And what kind of predators would those be?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I think we have a good amount. We have bears. We have mountain lions. We have coyotes.
Ooh.
We have fox.
Okay.
So we have to be very careful with how our chickens are raised. So safety and the care of our animals is very, very important to us. So the design of the barn, where they're able to be pastured and be safe, and they come when they're called every night, so they come into the barn. They're very well trained.
You call them, you say, hey, Susie, it's time to come in. How do you call?
Yeah, I do. Actually, with the horses, I yell horses, and we have one horse who's in charge of the herd. Her name is Pippa. And when I see Pippa's head come up because she hears me yell, horses, then they just come galloping across the pasture and into the barn at night. It's hysterical, and it is so much fun. I got to tell you, this life, it's amazing. I'm just so happy.
I wish you could see the expression on my face as a city girl going, what?
I know.
Yes,
of course. I've never done
come
this
on.
Before.
What? Oh, my God. So what, do you have a megaphone? How the hell do they hear you?
You know, when you're out there, you get loud. You get loud.
Okay.
It's amazing. You know, it's we have a pretty extensive garden now. I never baked, but I started baking because I live on a farm. I think there's certain things that just happen where you're like, oh, what am I going to do with all these zucchinis? I better come up with a great zucchini bread recipe.
Right.
And, you know, we've got freezers everywhere. We've got big pantries. You know, it's a...
What
it's
a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. And I talk about it in the book that I don't care what phase of life that you're in. If you are intentional and conscious about thinking about what's important to you, about the life you want, the life you really want to be living, then you can set about with your decision-making, use that as criteria for yourself. Excuse me, my mouth didn't want to work. And that's how you make your decisions about where you're going to live, What's important to you? How do you spend your money? What do you want your children, if you decide to have children, to be exposed to? What's important to you? That's the why.
Yeah. Wow. I'm looking at your website, and I love when you say, find your next with purpose, passion, and possibility, and that you are an immersion coach. And I don't think people would even know what that means. And so, well, because if you've never heard of an immersion.
I agree, because I made it
up.
So, yeah.
Well, there you have it. So why don't you talk to us about this program that you have called Immersion Coaching?
So I do coaching, sort of the traditional coaching with business leaders and people at different points in their careers. And, you know, thank goodness for Zoom, because I live in a rural area in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So I coach people at different phases of their lives, wherever they are. That's sort of the normal coaching. Then I was thinking for a couple of years, boy, I'd like to do a little bit of a different style of coaching and much more of a deep dive. Really, when people are starting to figure out or ask the questions for themselves of what's next and they need
mm-hmm.
help to find what's next, boy, I would love to be able to have them in much more of an immersion process where
mm-hmm.
if I could, wouldn't it be amazing to bring them to the ranch, which is so stunning and so open, get them out of their current reality, because it's really tough to figure out what's next when you're in the middle of it, of your just your regular life. So get people out of their lives. Get them to come to the ranch for a few days and spend that little bit more intense period of time one-on-one with them where it's all about them, where we also get to pamper the heck out of them. Matthew
mm-hmm.
does amazing meals, and we spend all of our time together talking just about them and what's their next. And I was like, I wish I could figure out how to do that. And then I just stopped one day and said, stop it. Stop this what if. Stop it. Make a choice. Make a decision. And lo and behold, it's like, do you really want to do this? Why is it important to you? What would it do? We took myself through the whole process and said, yes, made the decision to create an immersion program for people to come to the ranch. Define the process, and put it out in the world. And I tell you, people come from all over. They fly into our local airport. They drive throughout Colorado if they want to see the state. However they want to get there, they get there. And we spend 2.5 days together focused on them. So I work with individuals. I work with couples who might be retiring, who might have lost their alignment for where they are in their lives and what is their joint sort of next that they're looking to move into. And I found I can work really effectively with business partners who are trying to figure out what's next for the business that they run together. Because again, when they're in it, they can't think about the future. They can't think about how to move forward. And we all get stuck with that, whether it's an individual, you happen to be in a relationship as a couple with someone, or you're running a business. So those are my target audiences. And they
mm-hmm.
come, and I got to tell you, it's positive. Somebody asked me, is it like boot camp? You break them down and then you build them up?
I don't think so.
I'm positive of a human. You know, I'm very opportunistic, and I look for the whole thing is about when someone pulls up to the ranch, it's about moving forward from that moment. So we have amazing conversations and really help to create the path forward.
I'm thinking about your lifestyle.
Yeah.
One of the thoughts I had was, you know, I don't know how rural you are. Is it rural? I mean, like,
well,
do you have issues having electricity?
Grocery store. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
But
no,
but I mean, like,
we're not in a cabin.
Okay.
It's lovely. I mean,
okay.
My home, the guest house. People walk in and usually their jaw drops. It's beautiful,
yeah.
And big open skies, all the comfort, and
nice.
And if someone wants to do chores in the morning or the evening, they can. Matthew happens to be a professional dance instructor, so. Oftentimes we do dance lessons as part of it. It's
cool.
It's a hoot. We just laugh and we really get down to business. It's a beautiful experience.
How close are your neighborhood schools to where you live?
Well, we're only about 3.5 miles from the local town. Like the local town has 1,000 residents.
Okay.
So we're on a ranch, so we're surrounded by other ranchers.
And that's
ranches.
What I was thinking. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we're about 30 minutes from, you know, the Target, the grocery store, the Home
Got
Depot.
It.
So we're,
okay.
That's why I say
we're
kind
remote.
Of.
You're not remote, right.
No, we're not remote. We're rural, and which is a hard word to say as well. So we are country-ish, you know.
Got
I didn't want to be out in the middle. My original thing, we're not homesteaders,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm at a point in my life where I like to embrace my princess side. I'm not going to hide, you know?
Sure.
I'm just going to tell you. You know, the comforts are important.
I like that. You know, it's funny. I know a woman that lives here in this community that assists people that want to do TED Talks and helps them get on stage.
Yep. Sure.
And do those things. Have you ever thought about stepping into that genre and just actually stepping on a stage or going to a university or a high school or someplace like that to just talk about your lifestyle and what's important to you and your next?
I've done some public speaking. It's so funny you said that. A friend just reached out to me today who also runs a TEDx program out of Boulder, actually, and they're doing their TEDx for the year next weekend. And she was like, you know, one day I'm going to get you on that stage to tell your story. So it's very funny you brought that up. So
yeah,
I've done a little public speaking. You know, interestingly enough, part of the design of my lifestyle is that, boy, I love being where I am at. And I love
Isn't
people
that
coming
nice?
To me. And I'm very picky about where I go and how
mm-hmm.
I spend my time outside of the ranch. And typically it's with family.
Mm-hmm.
I love spending time with my family. So,
that's right.
And I love to travel. So Matthew and I like to have a really lovely blend in our lives where we've got time on the ranch, we've got time with the people who are important to us. And professionally,
mm-hmm.
there's times where I like to get out there and tell the story. I think that's why doing this show with you is so lovely, because
mm-hmm.
I can do it from,
mm-hmm.
you know, wherever I want.
The comfort of your home.
But
it's very true.
Thank you for this. Thank you.
But thank you, because you know what? Let's face it. I'm doing the exact same thing.
Yes, you are.
I'm speaking to you from the comfort of my home.
Yes.
And we don't live in the same state, and we don't have the same lifestyle. And yet what I find with all of my guests is that there's always some commonality or in some cases just an interest on my part, like, why?
Yes.
So, you know, why do you do this? So, you know, when people ask about what's next, I mean, I'm going to look at the word next so differently now. So if I was to say to you, and would you just restate again why you dropped the E and next?
I wanted a level of attention and importance to go to the effort and the process that somebody puts into when they are looking for what's next in your life. And I also want to say that I think sometimes we think that a next has to be this huge thing that
mm-hmm.
I think if we continue to dream, if
mm-hmm.
we continue to look at change in our life as a natural, opportunistic part of our life, then we
mm-hmm.
should have many, many necks, many changes, many movements forward. So I wish that for everybody.
So let me ask you, what's next for you?
Oh, wow. You know, I think, you know, the book was a big next. Then I wrote a workbook for the book. Then I just the audio book
audio book
for it, and I recorded the audio book. I consider those all next.
Yes.
You actually said something earlier in our conversation, which is an idea that I've had that, I think I want to take some of the lessons from the book about the blockers, about dreaming, about feeling okay about making things up. And I want to do a series of children's books using the farm animals as the characters for the book. So
that
I think, is going to be my next.
Brilliant.
Because I think, brilliant. Right? And I think, children, you are dead on. You are absolutely correct. I think children should hear it, that change can be positive, is positive, is that failure doesn't exist as long as we learn. That all of those things that you and I were talking about, our children, I think, from the earliest ages should have that understanding so that they don't let the blockers get in their way.
I agree. And, you know, and they will. So, I mean, it's obvious the blockers are going to get in the way. The question is, what do you do about it?
Yes.
How do you handle it? What are your coping skills? Who do you talk with? Do you have a best friend? Do you meditate? Do you go out and walk in nature? You know, what
you
are the skills? Do you have a coach? And you know what? And a lot of us need them. You know, that's why there are coaches in sports. You don't just get out there as a team and think you're going to win.
Yep.
So,
I
mean, coaching is
very valuable. Very valuable.
It really is. And I could see you speaking at universities. I could just see you
speaking
in a lot of places where, you know, maybe you're a first-year college student and you're actually, I could really see you speaking like probably an 11th grade high school class where you're starting to think about, maybe even prior to that, maybe 9th grade, where you're thinking about, what am I going to study? What do I want to do? Do I need to know right now what I want to do? No. You don't need to know right now what you want to do. Do you know what you like to do? I know what I like to do now. Well, is there something maybe you haven't considered doing that maybe you would like to do? You know, there's so many opportunities. And I, like I said, I live in a big city. I live in a city. I live 3 blocks from a major university. I don't have the lifestyle that you have. But that doesn't mean that our desires are necessarily not in alignment, because they still can be. They absolutely can be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the transformation that I made from being a suburban girl to a ranch girl, from a CEO to a coach, to, you know, designing a life that has basis on really what I feel is important to how I want to live the life that I really want, is the same for everybody. It's relatable to everybody.
Absolutely.
You can change out whatever, you know, suburban to city to rural to remote to CEO to, you know, I'm a nurse. I work in construction. I'm a realtor. It doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. We all change and grow and evolve. At least I hope we want to.
We have to have a willingness. So not being stuck is not the answer. You have to find your next. And that's what your book is all about. And I will make sure that people can see how to get it off your website. And I thank you for sending it to me. I think that it's important if we're looking to discover. I'm sure I'm much older than you, and we never know when we're going to be able to make a pivot like this that you just described. But if there's not a willingness, then you can just be stuck. Now, maybe you're happy being stuck. I mean, who am I to judge if where you are isn't where you need to be? But if you're looking to make some kind of change, you know, your book has the opportunity to provide you some questions to ask yourself. And I think that's one of the beauties of your book. So I just want to thank you so much, Cindy, for spending this hour with me, sharing your life story, allowing me to share a little bit of my own as well, and just having this lovely conversation with somebody I've never met. And I feel a deep connection to you because I think that what you do is really, really important. And I want to just thank you so much for what you've shared with our listeners today.
Why, thank you. And this has been fun. And don't you...
Good.
I just think we should enjoy what we do, right? So thank
you. Absolutely.
This has been very, very enjoyable. And I hope your listeners enjoy it as well. And if anybody's out there that's looking to find their next, I hope they contact me.
There you go. I'll make sure they know how to. All right,
thank
everybody.
You.
Well, as always, this is another wonderful way to spend my Mondays. I look forward to sharing this with you all on my social media. And I look forward to doing this again next week with yet another wonderful guest. So thank you, Cindy, very much. Have a lovely day on your ranch in Colorado. Bye for now, everybody. Bye-bye.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.